Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours.
I felt like it was on brand for me to not cancel it. We haven't canceled Meditation Weekend 13. We're just taking it virtual. So if you'll look where you see this post, the post that's above it, I changed the cover picture on there. And so what we're going to do is we're still having Meditation Weekend 13. From now on, I'm not going to cancel any more of these, no matter what happens with COVID or any other thing that comes out of Pandora's box. If we don't have them live, we'll just do them virtual. Hey, Leona. So we're still having it next weekend, the 22nd and 23rd, because this will be virtual. Hey, Byron. We don't have to, it's usually based on the sunset and the sunrise on Saturdays and Sundays. Good. I'm glad, Jeanette. Glad to see you're better. But since this is going to be indoors, I'm doing a night meditation next Saturday night, the 22nd at 7 p.m. Hey, Christine. And then I'll do a, instead of my regular teaching here, next Sunday at 11 a.m., I'll be leading the morning meditation. This will not be posted on my regular Facebook page. If you want to be a part of it, there's no charge, but you need to ask to join the group. And I'm going to do a little test run with it this week because I've never done a room before. When you do a group, you can actually do a room. And I don't know if I'm not sure that's what I want to do, because if it's like Zoom is a little distracting to me. And I think some of you might not want to be on camera. So if that's I'll run a test of it. If not, I'll just post live in the group. Understand? So all you have to do, if you look at it, it's right above this post on my page. You just ask to join, and we'll put you in. It's the people who had already signed up to go to LJ and had gotten their rooms. I'm assuming you all were able to cancel. But I'm actually excited about this. I think this is going to be really good. It's not going to replace the outdoor live ones, because those are incredible, especially the ones on the beach. But I'm curious to, in a positive way, I'm curious to see how this is going to turn out. I actually have a really good feeling about it. So if you just remember 7-11 and join with us next weekend, January 22nd and 23rd. Oh, okay. All right. Good to know, Ed. Thank you. I wasn't sure how that worked. Well, maybe I'll just keep it with the room. I noticed many of you have already clicked on there. Okay. Well, then I'll do it that way. So good. I love all you tech savvy people who are there to answer my questions. Let's do some affirmations. When I say them, you're supposed to repeat, "Hey, Reg, thanks for posting the picture of the painting of the winter solstice, which is your birthday." I can have up to 50. Oh, okay. It sounds like Zoom. All right. Maybe I'll keep it at that, and if it looks like there's more than 50, I'll just take it out live to the group. Anyway, I'll figure it out. When I say these, you're supposed to repeat after me. There's energy that you put out into the atmosphere by the words of your mouth. I am blessed. I am a blessing. I am. I am whole. I am wholeness. I am. I am healed. I am healing, or I am health. I am. I am well. I am wellness. I am. Hey, Chandra. I am Oh, thank you, Jeanette. I appreciate that. I am blessed. I think this is what you were saying, Chandra. I am blessed. I am a blessing. I am. I am peaceful. I am peace. Hey, Wellington. I am. I am serene. I am serenity. I am. Yeah, Rhonda, I am sound, or I have a sound mind. I am soundness. I am. Good. I love it. You guys got the hang of it. You know how that works. Let's do some breath work. We'll be doing a lot of this. Oh, it's 11:11, huh? Look. Isn't that funny? I just instinctively looked at my watch at 11:11. Crazy. Hey, Holly. I'll be doing a lot of in-depth breath work at this meditation weekend, which is why I don't want to put it out on the Facebook page, because not everybody understands what we're doing. So I have to assume if you click on and specifically want to join that group, that you're meditation friendly. So when we breathe, we breathe in through our nose and hold it, and then we release out of our mouth. All right, here we go. Hold. Out. In. Out. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. As I say every week, the combination of affirmations and the breath work is very powerful. The Creator creates everything through the words of His mouth. We create everything in our world through the words of our mouth. The Creator breathed into His creation. We breathe into our world. The words breath and spirit are used interchangeably in both the Old and New Testaments. So, yes, meditation is Eastern. It is not anti-Christian. Jesus meditated. David meditated. So, David talked a lot about meditation, actually. So, and you all know that. So, good. Hey, Stephanie. I wanted to share several things with you. It's been a hey, Barbara, it's been an interesting, not just week, but since the first of the year, it feels like everybody that contacts me is in crisis. And, you know, I'm used to it. I'm approaching, in a few days will be my 50th ministry anniversary. So I'm used to talking to people in crisis, but maybe it's because I'm by myself so much during the week and don't really have verbal conversations with people, but sometimes it seems like the only time I hear from people is when they're in crisis, and sometimes I get a little saturated with it, which is why I didn't write anything this week, and then I had a little surgical procedure I had to deal with, and so I just was being quiet, and thank you for understanding that. But several things have been sort of been teachable moments. I do want to acknowledge that tomorrow is MLK Day. It's a national holiday, and the King Center is just a few blocks from here. My family's life has been very paralleled with the King's. Daddy King spoke at my high school graduation, and Many times I've gone to the celebration there at Ebenezer, Anyway, always think about Dr. King and his words and the whole thing about I have a dream, and the speech that he made, which was actually, I remember it was on my 10th birthday because he was assassinated on April 4th, 1968. My birthday is the 3rd, and I remember it was after my little birthday party. We were watching the news, and they showed his mountaintop speech, where he talked about his own mortality. I mean, it was really, when you watch it now, it's eerie how prophetic it is, because he talks about longevity. His actual birthday was yesterday. He would have been 93 if he hadn't been assassinated. And he was in his 40s when he died. But in his mountaintop speech, he talks about longevity, and he says longevity has its place. And he says, I might not get there with you, but we as a people will see the promised land. And that's where he says, you know, he ends by saying, free at last, thank God Almighty, free at last. It's a very powerful speech. And then when you watch it in hindsight, I don't think I've ever heard anybody prophesy their own mortality like that. And I mean, I'm sure you've all seen it. If you haven't seen it, it's on all over YouTube. But I was thinking about this yesterday. The scripture that I have in mind today is it's out of Psalm 37. Psalm 37 is a really cool Psalm of David's, and there's several really good verses in there, like delight yourself in the Lord, he'll give you the desires of your heart. The steps of a righteous man are ordered of the Lord. There are a lot of very quotable sound bites come out of Psalm 37. But in verse 37 of chapter 37, Psalm 37:37, in the King James it says, mark the perfect man, for the end of that man is peace. And there's many different translations of it. Most translations say something like, consider a man of integrity, because he will have a good future, or it's kind of David's version of all's well that ends well. And I'm very careful how I teach this, because I never want to be judgmental about how somebody else, how their life ended. But the thing is, I mean, I've been, this week I've had prayer requests from several people who have life and death situations. I mean, they're not, and not just Corona. I mean, it's a lot of things going on with people. Hey, Beck. Hey, Sophie. But one way or the other, all of us are going to experience that thing that we perceive as death. I feel like death is a perception. I don't think, you know, we ever actually die. We just leave this body. We leave this earth suit and go into another dimension. But it's what we on this side call death. And in Hebrews, it says it is appointed unto man once to die. So, like, if you know, if you ask a doctor, am I going to die? I mean, his answer will always be yes. I mean, eventually you will. And you know, I am to an age now where I think not about mortality as much as I think about, you know, I want my senior years to be good ones. I want to end up, peaceful and have a happy ending to things. And I don't want to end up like, I know a lot of people in the ministry that after they retired, they were very bitter. I mean, the church world could do a number on you. I was watching last night. I was kind of channel surfing, and I ended up watching a couple of episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. And the whole, you know, Larry David created Seinfeld. And so Curb Your Enthusiasm is sort of like Seinfeld on steroids, because Seinfeld was based on minutia, like people who obsessed over stuff that really doesn't matter. And the Larry David show takes it to a whole other level. The whole thing is about people just obsessing over stupid, ridiculous stuff and taking everything personally and overreacting to everything. And as I was watching it last night, I thought, God, it so reminds me of not so much church in the now, but church world I grew up in, that legalistic system. People were always obsessing over stuff that didn't matter. Church splits over the color of carpet and just crazy stuff. And a lot of it's just human nature, but a lot of it really is something about just the oddness of church culture. I've never, in all the years I've been in the ministry, I've never got used to this. And it really doesn't, it's really not even a part of my reality now. But there was a time, and it didn't just happen to me. It was not exclusive to me. But in church world, I remember sometimes I would think, I could say one thing in a sermon today, and people who are very, very involved with my life could never speak to me again. And it used to happen all the time. I mean, people would go from one week saying, "You're my pastor, you're the most anointed man I've ever met," to, "I'm never speaking to you again." And like I said, it's not just me. I mean, in other conversations I've had with people, if it ever came up about church, I would say, "Well, where did you go to church?" And they'd say, "Well, I went to that church for 30 years. And then one day the pastor said this thing about tithing and I never went back." And I always thought that was so odd about church culture because it's so fragile. It's so contrary to people resolving things. In church culture, people don't resolve things. They just split a church or they leave a church or they go to another church. And it was usually over. It was just weird. It was always over like really strange stuff It taught me over the years that people's reactions to things really has very little to do with you. It has to do much more with them. Something that you do triggers them in a way that's it's not about you at all. Anyway, I think a lot about how what are my, because I'm already in my senior years, but for whatever time I have left. And I've modified, I used to say I'm living out my 120 years, like it's promised in Genesis 6. Now I've modified that. Now I say, as long as I'm in my right mind and I'm viable and I can take care of myself, then yes, I want to live 120 years. If not, then I'd rather go on to the next dimension and get a new body and all the, I've been around death and transition so much in my life that I'm not blasé about it. I'm just very matter of fact about it. I mean, it's real. I mean, I was watching people die when I was 4 years old, and so I'm it's very real to me that it happens. So my point is I think, however long I have left, I want my final years to be, I want to be a sage. I want to be a seer. I want to be the kind of guy that young people want to come and learn from my wisdom. I don't want to be the parent that my kids dread because I'm always, mad about something they did or I'm critical. I want to be fun dad, fun poppy that my grandkids, my favorite Christmas gift this year was Christina texting me saying, We're coming to Atlanta next year because the girl said they don't want to spend another Christmas without you and they miss you. And Sophia had adopted some sarcastic statement of mine. I was like, this is the best Christmas ever that my granddaughters miss me. And, I miss hanging out with them because I used to see them several times a week. I used to pick them up from school and do a lot of stuff with them. And then they moved to Santa Fe. It was a dramatic shift. And, so I think a lot about not how I'm going to die, but how am I going to end up? How did my story end? Like some people have asked in interviews, they would say, "Why did you, after you came out, why did you want to get married?" And I would say to them, "Well, first of all, I'm a husband. I'm monogamous, But the other thing is my coming out was so high profile that if I didn't have a happy ending, it's just kind of a sad story. It's like this guy came out and he lost this mega ministry and then we never heard from him again. I would rather live out loud and say, no, I lived the life that I want to live. This is the life I've always desired to live. The God stuff was always real, but I can totally be who I am. Ken and I, we just celebrate our 7th wedding anniversary, but we're approaching 10 years together. And to be able to have that and live out loud and show by example, you know, we're still good dads, we're still good grandfathers. So many stereotypes that people have about gay people, LGBT people. I love being able to explode those myths and say, you know, look at me. This is the face of, this is who, you know, I'm just living my authentic life. It's not about sex. It's not about any of that. It's about being who you are and who you always were. So I always want to think about things like bitterness or being judgmental or being too opinionated. Because one thing I've noticed, whatever is in your personality, as you get older, it actually becomes more extreme. Like I've noticed sweet people become sweeter as they get older. Judgmental people become more judgmental as they get older. Religious people become more religious. Contentious people become more contentious. Like whatever arc you are on in your personality, it just becomes more pronounced as you get older. So I want to be, you know, I want to prophesy to my elder years that I walk in so much wisdom that that young people, and it happens all the time. I hear from young people all the time, but that young people would approach me like, I want to be like a shaman on top of a mountain that people want to come visit. And I think about, I was reading a little bit, the last chapter of Acts chapter 28. The scripture doesn't say that Paul was martyred. Some historians say that he might have been, but there's a little bit of a conflict with that. All we have at the end of Paul's story in the New Testament is that he was under house arrest, but that he had a house in Rome, and it says he spent 2 years. This is how the book of Acts ends. It says he spent 2 years free to preach, that people would come to him, and like he kept audience with people all the time. And the way I look at it, I think, you know, it was kind of cathartic for him after all the years of him being beaten and shipwrecked and all that kind of stuff, for him just to be in a nice house where, and it says nobody forbade him. He could say whatever he wanted to say. When I read it from the scriptures, I think, well, Paul kind of ended up okay. I mean, I don't know for sure what his death was like. I don't know how many of the apostles were actually, I mean, I'm familiar with Fox's Book of Martyrs. I know all that. But I don't know how many of them were actually martyred. I mean, some of it's legend, some of it's mythology. But I like the way Moses ended up. You know, he just leaned on his staff and released his spirit. Best case was Enoch, because it says we don't even know how Enoch died. He just had this testimony that he pleased God, and he was not. He just was translated to the other side. And then you got Elijah, who leaves in a chariot of fire. So a lot of these people really ended well. When Elijah died, remember when they threw he was in a communal burial plot, and there was still so much anointing in his bones that when they threw a corpse on top of his corpse, the corpse came back to life. I mean, again, who knows how much of that is literal? But I'm saying all of these things not to, and also thinking about King's birthday, not to judge Dr. King, because he truly was a martyr. And so many of, you know, the greats were martyred. John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, Robert Kennedy, Gandhi, John Lennon. I mean, you know, It used to be when people would say, you remind me of one of these people. I'm like, could we make the exception that I'm not going to be martyred? I would like to not be martyred. I'm not afraid to be martyred, but I would like to live out my days and have like this really beautiful, peaceful passing. Not even call it a death. And there's so many ironies about, I've actually taught on this, that when you think about Dr. King and Malcolm X, King was, and this is oversimplified, but King's message was more white friendly. I mean, he had more allies in the white community, and a white man shot him. And then Malcolm X, his message was much more, it was a more black friendly message. I know I'm oversimplifying that, but you know what I mean. And then it was black guys that shot him. So there's a whole irony with that, and martyrdom is a whole other piece. And like I said at the beginning of this, King clearly had made peace with the fact that he knew there was a target on him. And it seems from that mountaintop speech that he had just sort of surrendered to it. I mean, I don't even think he was afraid of it at that point. But I was thinking about this yesterday, and I thought about not even mentioning it, but it just seems like it's such a synchronistic thing that I am going to say something about it. I sent Ted Wynn a message about it, but I said I wasn't going to post about it, but I am going to talk about it. So yesterday, there's a guy, a man, his name was Elder Cal Murrell, and he was known in the Atlanta community as the happy preacher. And as far back as I can remember, I'm thinking at least back to the 80s, maybe to the 70s, any event that I went to, especially any church event that had a large African-American, if it was like a black church event, or a funeral, or a concert, or a gospel concert, this guy, I posted pictures of him on Instagram, he showed up at everything. He's called the happy preacher. And he was not only an Atlanta fixture, he was a character. He would always arrive late for the service. He was always impeccably dressed, like super flashy, coordinated. Like you could tell he put a lot of thought into what he wore. Always carried a little tambourine with him. And, you know, in black church culture, it's very normal for the audience to be involved verbally, you know, like that's true Pentecostals for white Pentecostal people. But in black church, it's even true in Baptist churches that, you know, the preacher says something and the people, there's a call and response thing. It's just part of the thing. And so people were, you know, in those settings, certainly used to it. But, yeah, that's interesting. Interesting, Jeanette, about Bob Saget, huh? Anyway, same with Betty White. By the way, Betty White did not die from a booster shot. She was 99. She had a stroke, went peacefully, found her in bed the next day. Please don't politicize Betty White for your agenda. She did not, that is an urban legend that she died from a booster. She didn't even have a booster shot. Please leave Betty alone. Anyway, I always enjoyed, well, let's say about Happy Preacher. Like if everybody else was saying amen on every other statement, he was saying amen and shouting on every statement and getting up and dancing and doing his tambourine. And sometimes it was great and it was in the flow of things. Other times it was like, wow. You know, you could tell everybody in the place, because a lot of times whoever was up on the platform would kind of bust his chops a little bit and say, could you bring it down a notch? I mean, I heard Bernice King do it one time. And just because he ended up absorbing so much of the attention in the room. I actually liked when he would show up for stuff, because some of these services would just go on so long. And I, like I said in my post, I kind of have ecclesiastical ADD. Like I can't, some of these, like Coretta Scott King's funeral was 6 hours long. I mean, that's a long time to sit without even getting up and going to the bathroom. And Happy Preacher would kind of, he would kind of break the monotony of things. You know, like sometimes he would be calling so much and saying so much and shouting so much, even when it didn't seem appropriate. It's kind of like he was doing his own thing. And you could feel sometimes when the audience would be like, dude, we're not even really amening right now. Like, settle down. This is kind of a quiet part of the sermon. But then he was just so consistent with it. He would do one more that would just crack up the whole congregation because it was just funny. Like, you couldn't, he was undaunted. Like people would tell him to shut up, and he was like the, if y'all remember, yes, it is going to be odd without him, Pam. I never went to a King service that he wasn't there. But he was at everything. I'm trying to remember, I don't know if Jared's on here today, but if you are, Jared, it seems like to me he even came to the Mighty Hannibal's funeral when you and I did that. I think he was even at that. I mean, he was such an Atlanta fixture that if you were, especially if you were black and you had a church thing, your event was not legit if Happy Preacher didn't show up. It's like him showing up was the, it's like now we can have church. Even though sometimes it was like, you want to go, dude, less is more, like reel it in a little bit. As I said, I always liked him because he was just so infinitely entertaining. And he was sort of like, some of y'all remember, I don't think she was the first one that recorded it, but I remember Shirley Caesar covered that song, Hold My Mule, and it's about an old guy, what's his name, Farmer John or something, that he was shouting too much in the church. So the preacher came to him and said, you're taking up too much. You're getting too much attention in the church. We need you to calm down a little bit. And I'm not saying this right, but he said, you can Google it. If you Google Hold My Mule, you'll see it. And he says, hold the reins on my mule. And he starts shouting out there on the, in the field. And the point of the song is there are people who are committed to, their joy, their exuberance. And you're just not going to dampen their spirits. You're just not going to, shouting John. You're right, Jeffrey. You're just not going to rain on their parade. Now, on the other side of that, like I did a couple of events that I spoke at and Happy Preacher was at. And I'd say, Elder, you're going to have to settle down because it's distracting for me. I'm not good at call and response. And, like I've been invited to so many black churches that would have like the guy on the Hammond organ who would kind of work with the preacher. And I'd be like, I can't, I love that you do that. It distracts me. I can't do it. And they would always bring me oh, hey Jared, you are the, yeah, I think you, I thought I remembered that he was at Hannibal's funeral. He was at everything. I mean, I didn't go to any prominent black person's funeral in the last 30 years that he wasn't there. Oh, really? At Whitney Houston? Oh, okay. Interesting. But like I'd go to these black churches and they would, the Ministry of Helps would bring me out a towel, you know, for when I started sweating, and I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to break a sweat. So, I mean, a lot, black audiences would have to get used to me. Which they did. But anyway, I was thinking about this yesterday. And I was thinking about the brevity of life and how the things that we think matter, really in the big picture, don't matter. So however many years ago it was that Coretta Scott King died, that's back when Bishop Long's church, New Birth, was, you know, ginormous. And her funeral was there at the church. Back then, Bernice King was on staff at New Birth. And so instead of having Mrs. King's funeral at Ebenezer, they opted to have it at New Birth because it was a larger auditorium. And that's back when Renee was my secretary, and she said, "Are you going to Coretta King's funeral?" I said, "I'd love to, but I'm sure I can't get in." And she said, "Well, I'm going to call Bishop Long." And I said, "No, don't. I mean, I've known him for years, but..." And by the way, I'm going to say several things about Bishop Long. I'm going to ask you, please don't post anything negative about him. If you have issues with him, don't do that on my page, because that's not what this is about. I have compassion for Eddie Long in ways that a lot of people wouldn't understand, because I feel for men who have an anointing who can't tell the truth about themselves, and it many times affects them. I mean, one man really close to me committed suicide. For other people, it metastasizes and becomes disease that takes them out. And so I'm not judging them in any way. I'm trying to learn from their example. So I said, "No, Renee, don't bother them. I mean, he's got presidents flying in and all this stuff. Like, please do not do that." Well, she did it anyway. She called his office, and she said, Judah was going to go with me. And Judah was my youth pastor at the time. And so his office said, "Yeah, we got two seats for you." And it was the Coretta King's funeral was like, I remember telling Judah, I said, "Look around." And I said, "We're like in Madame Tussauds Wax Museum come to life." I mean, it's like every politician, every celebrity, every president, like anybody you can think of, they're all here for this thing. I mean, like, we're sitting there. To my left is Stevie Wonder. To my right is Chris Tucker. In front of me is Malcolm X's daughter sitting next to Joel Osteen. Over across the aisle is all the Senate, all the House of Representatives, including Barack Obama, who was not president yet. I mean, it was a... a historical event. So they told me, they said, please come to the side and somebody will let you in. And we were like on the eighth row. I mean, it was, I really appreciated that they did that. Because that's not always the case. I mean, when Bishop Long died, Judah and I tried to go to his funeral. We could not even get near the place. I mean, we just had to turn around. There was no way to get in. Anyway, so as we're walking in, Happy Preacher is behind us. Like, there's a little bit of a line of people who are coming into this side entrance. And I didn't know him well, but I'd seen him around for years. He was at my Uncle Earl's funeral. I mean, I always saw him around. He always knew who I was. He always called me Bishop Sweely. But at least it wasn't Swiley. So we're about to enter, and Bishop Long lets Judah and me in, and then he stops Happy Preacher and he says, "You can't come in." And so they kind of got into a little altercation. It was very awkward. Because I wanted to say, "Bishop Long, just let him in. He'll sit with us. It's fine." And I kind of understood why Long did it. I had mixed feelings about it because, you know, they're trying to televise this thing. And when Happy Preacher was in the audience, you just ended up listening to him the whole time. I mean, he ended up competing with whoever was speaking. And I think Long just made an executive decision and said, "There's no way you're going to behave yourself in this funeral. I'm just going to have to tell you, you can't come in." So it was I kind of felt bad about it. And it was like, it wasn't my call. So, you know, we went in, and that was years ago. I never heard anything else about it. So yesterday, when people started posting about him passing, I thought, wow, that's interesting that he passed on Dr. King's birthday. And then I thought, wait a minute, didn't Eddie Long pass on King's birthday too? And I looked in my memories, and sure enough, Bishop Long had died 5 years ago. And I'm thinking about how odd is that, that the memory I always have of Happy Preacher is Bishop Long not letting him into Coretta Scott King's funeral for whatever reason. And then thinking, you know, you can't foresee the future, but if I had known then what I know now, I would have said to them, hey, you guys, just be at peace with each other. In a few years, you're both going to be gone. And interestingly enough, you're going to die on the same day. I mean, 5 years apart, but you're both going to die on King's birthday. I don't know why that just struck me as so, I'm still trying to figure out why I'm so intrigued with that. And I guess the best way I can explain it is, big picture, the things that you think matter really don't matter. And this is true whether you're my age or younger. I mean, life's going fast. I mean, you think about another Christmas has come and gone. And I'll look in my, sometimes in my Facebook memories, it'll come up. And I was saying, 6 years ago, I was saying, I can't believe Christmas has come and gone so fast. I feel like we just put up the Christmas tree and took it down. I think, gosh, that was 5 years ago, or that was 6 years ago, or that was 7 years ago. It's difficult for me to keep track of time anyway. So sometimes something will come up in my Facebook memories and I think, gosh, that was 9 years ago. How is that possible? Or that was 5 years ago. Like, that just seems like I'm still referring to that as the other day. And I'm not, look, the reason I brought up the story is it was just interesting to me that they both, my memory of them was both of, you know, them having an interaction, a little bit of an altercation. Then they're united on the same death date, which is actually a significant date. It was the day that Dr. King was born, and we were there for his widow's funeral. I don't know. It just seems too interesting not to mention it. And my point is, the stuff that you are concerned about right now, you really have to think, is this going to matter a year from now? Is this going to matter 5 years from now? Is this going to matter after I'm gone? Aside from the fact that everybody's life is going fast, even if you live to be 100, the fact is you never know, you know, somebody, I mean, Bob Saget just died. He was my age, I think a year older. And I don't think they've still determined what was the cause of death. But the point is, you never know when you have a conversation with somebody when it's going to be your last conversation. And that's why it's important to always leave a conversation well with somebody. You know, if you can end it with I love you or something that feels organic to you, always try to leave somebody with something that's positive, because you don't know when it's going to be your last conversation with somebody. And that's why it was in my memories today. I was something I posted, I don't know, I guess last year maybe. Because I read even people very close to me who just get into it on social media with each other about politics, and they argue about stuff. And I was trying to explain why I just delete comments and end up blocking people, because I said in 11 years I've been on Facebook, I've never gone on anybody's page, even if I'm horrified by what they say. And let me tell you this, there are people that I love very much who say things that horrify me on a regular basis. So, I mean, I'm very disciplined in this, because I never take them to task. I never argue with them about something, even when I really feel like they're wrong about it. I just don't get into it. If you do, that's fine. That's your journey. I have no problem with that. Like, I know Howie and I have discussed this, and he has a different take on it, and I respect his viewpoint. He has the stomach for it. More power to you. I mean, sometimes I'll send a meme or a quote to Howie because I'm like, I'll say, I'm never going to post this, but this sounds like something you would post. I thought you'd find this interesting. I don't like to live in that. It just stresses me out. And I was explaining to people, I said, I never go public and rebuke anybody about anything, ever. I defy you to go through my social media and find some time that I've gotten into it with somebody. I just don't do it. To me, it's like, I'm not going to change their opinion anyway. Faith comes by hearing, and basically you believe whatever you believe about politics is depending on the news channel that you watch regularly. Whether it's the truth or not, you believe what you hear on a regular basis. Faith comes by hearing. You believe what you hear. And most times we look for information that confirms what we already believe. So I just don't do it. I don't get into it. If somebody gets, they get controversial with me, sometimes I'll just take the post off because I think, oh man, this is, I'm just not interested in engaging with you. And what I said in that post yesterday, I said, for some of you, me not arguing with you is an act of mercy because I could go public, especially over biblical stuff, and I could humiliate you. I mean, I didn't say this in my post, but that's what I'm thinking. Like, I could embarrass you so easily because your lack of knowledge of the scriptures is so glaring. But what I would have no satisfaction in doing that. It's like, and again, this is pretty much stopped now, but for the first few years after I came out, I couldn't believe how many people would cut and paste the same verses out of Leviticus to me over and over and over and over again. I would think, do you honestly think in 40, 45 years of preaching at that time, I've never read this verse? I mean, like, you think I'm gonna read this verse out of Leviticus and say, oh, wow, well, this changes everything. I mean, like, it would be like, I was telling Avery yesterday in a conversation, it would be like me messaging Warren Buffett and trying to give him tips on investments. Hey, Warren, did you, check out like telling him about the value of the dollar or something. I'm like, why would I tell? I mean, that guy already knows this stuff. Why would I tell him anything? And I don't know how to fix your car. If there's something I don't know, I have no problem just saying, I don't know about that. That's my ego is not hurt by that at all. But I know my way around those 66 books of the Protestant canon. I know, especially those 27 in the New Testament. I would just say, save yourself the embarrassment. Don't argue with me about it, because that stuff I know. But I don't even have any desire to argue with you about it. It's like, it just doesn't satisfy me to show somebody that I'm right and they're wrong. I mean, one scripture I stand by is the scripture that says, let him who is ignorant be ignorant still. I can't tell you the times that people will say something to me that I just look at them and think, I can't believe you actually think that's true. But you're too limited in your understanding for me to even explain this to you of why you're so wrong. So unless you come to me and ask, please enlighten me, I'm just not going to argue with you because it's probably just going to galvanize you to double down on your opinion that is so, it's so easy to attack, but why bother? And again, those of you that like to do that, look, part of free speech is dissent. So I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm saying for me, I think at this point in my life, I've had enough contention and controversy. I mean, church world, not Jesus, but pastoring a church, what the compromises you have to make to have a successful ministry are so unlike Jesus that it's just exhausting. And even Jesus was only in the ministry for 3 years and on the earth, you know, then he left. Some of us have been doing it half a century, and it's just, at this point, it's like, I understand why Jesus said, agree with your adversary quickly. Now I'm just like, well, just pray for us, you know. But my point in saying all of that, even the whole thing about the thing that happened at Coretta Scott's funeral, it's like now I look back and I think, wow, who would have known all that was going to happen in the years ahead? All that happened with Bishop Long, and you know, that was before any of his scandal stuff happened. And you know, now you look back in the grand scheme of things, and it didn't even matter for either one of them. Now I could say, Bishop Long, just let him in. It doesn't matter. And Elder, just kind of keep it down a little bit, just out of respect for all the dignitaries that are here. You know, out of respect for Bishop Long, who I'm sure is under a lot of stress because he's the host. And that was a big deal. For whatever you say about Eddie Long, to have to host presidents, you got four living presidents sitting on the stage and you're the host. I mean, that's a lot. So, you know, I could see both of their sides on it. But now, all these years later, they're both gone. It's like it doesn't even matter. That was just a little blip on a screen that most people never even knew happened. Back in the Pentecostal days, we used to sing this song, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. And there's a basic truth to that. Whether you realize it or not, you're constantly building legacy. You're constantly creating an image, a brand in people's mind that after you're gone, they're going to remember you a certain way. I want people to remember me a particular way. And I believe you do too. And I'm only saying this to say next time, like when you're going to write something to somebody, before you send that email, before you post that post, if you feel kind of a hesitancy about it, listen to that. That's why I tell people sometimes when they're going to write a letter of dismissal or something, I will say, go ahead and write it and then don't look at it for about 48 hours. And then come back and look at it after you've kind of settled down and you don't feel as passionate about it. Some of the things that you think are really important may not matter that much to you now. I posted a meme earlier this week. It was just on the heels of just my phone just blowing up. One crisis after another. And lots of people, I know I say this all the time, but there's this whole generation of people that have never been to Metron. I haven't seen them in 10 years, 20 years. They don't go to Judas Church. But they still consider me their pastor and still call me for everything. You know, they'll say, you'll always be my pastor. And I think, okay, if that's how you feel, I don't really think of myself that way, but okay, fine. I mean, we haven't had any interaction at all in 2 decades, but if that's, you know, far be it for me to tell you I'm not your pastor if that's how you see me. But I was doing so much crisis stuff this week that I posted this thing. I said, please be kind. Everybody's going through it, or something about everybody's going through a battle that you can't see and you know nothing about. And I know that that's true. I know that I know that I know that's true. No matter how secure you are, no matter how self-confident you are, no matter how healthy your self-esteem is, you're still dealing with stuff that most people have no idea about. Now, having said that, let me also say this. And for some of you who are watching, you may think, is he talking about me? Yeah, I probably am, because there's a lot of you watching today that I've had conversations with in the last few days. Well, not a lot of you, but some of you. Your situation is not hopeless. if you got a bad diagnosis from a doctor, it doesn't mean, and I'm not anti-doctor, but it doesn't necessarily have to be your truth. You don't have to accept it. I know people who have diseases that went into remission and now they've kind of come back. It's easy for me to say because it's not me dealing with it, but you know, hope against hope. Let's keep believing for the best. If you are dealing with addiction and you had a little bit of a setback, it doesn't mean you're all the way back to square one. It just means you had a little setback. I remember I shared this with somebody this week. This just always impressed me, but some of you remember Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts, when he was a teenager, with his mother took him to like a tent revival, and he was healed of tuberculosis. He was dying of TB. I mean, he was coughing up his lungs. And so he went to this tent meeting, and he got healed, and he told everybody that he'd gotten healed. And then sometime later, he was playing basketball. He was on the high school basketball team, and he coughed up blood. And he panicked because he thought, oh, man, I've told all these people that I'm healed, but I'm not healed. It's still here. And he had been like an invalid. I don't know how long he was bedfast, but he was, for some extended period of time, he was bedfast. And that day he went home and his grandmother was there and he said something to her. He said, you know, I told everybody that I was healed, but I'm bleeding again. And I think I'm gonna have to go lie down. And she said to him, and I understand the principle of this. She said, Oral, go lay down if you need to this afternoon. She's not talking about going to sleep at night, but she said, don't put your pajamas on and don't get under the covers. Just lay on top of the covers. And what she was saying to him is, just because you've had a little bit of a hiccup does not mean you're about to be an invalid again. So don't overreact to this thing. It's a simple bit of advice, but the principle of it is, if you had a setback, if you had something that reoccurred, don't trivialize it, don't minimalize it, but don't overreact to it either. It may just be, you know, after an earthquake happens, there's something called aftershocks, and it doesn't mean they're actual earthquakes, but it's just aftershocks, and sometimes we still have them. So I want you to keep hope. That's why I painted this picture the other day called Hope, and somebody's already decided they want it. So it's I don't think it's available, but don't give up just because you had. You know, just because you had an argument doesn't mean your marriage is over. Or just because you got sick doesn't mean you're about to die. Or just because you lost a battle doesn't mean you're about to lose the war. Or just because you had a drink doesn't mean you're totally back to, you know, being drunk all the time. It's like, it's not, like, keep it in perspective. And concentrate on what really matters. Concentrate on the big picture of your life. Judge your life in its entirety. And that's what I wanted to leave you with today. I want everybody to have a good ending for whenever it is. I want you to live out your time. I want you to be fabulous old people. I don't want you to overreact to things. I mean, I started to not even mention this because I hate when people tell you about their surgeries, but I had a little dental procedure this week. And usually I don't ask for this, but this was serious enough that I asked to have gas. And they charge you extra for it. I'd already planned for it. I'd already paid for it. So I go in and they'd given me three shots, and man, they were boogers, I gotta tell you. But we got past it, And I had never met this surgeon before. And I did like that he would count them down. He'd be like, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And it actually helped me deal with them. It's like, okay, at least I know we're coming to an end. My brain, even though I'm very right-brained and left-handed, I do get a certain sense of peace from numbers for some reason. More from a spiritual aspect than a cerebral, because I'm not good at math. But anyway, so when the assistant came in, they'd already put the oxygen on me. So I was already tethered, and I had the goggles on they put on you. So I already had apparatus all over my face. And she just kept clanking around with those tanks, I know, for like 10 minutes. Finally, I was like, is there a problem back there? Because I couldn't get up and turn around. I was like, is there a problem? And so she just leaves the room, and she's gone for like half an hour, to where I'm sitting there like, what the heck? So when she comes back in, I said, I don't know if this gas is supposed to be working, but I'm not feeling anything. And she says, no, we're having a problem with it. And so then the girl from up front comes in. She said, I don't know why. We ran this last night and it was fine, but we just cannot get the gas to work. I said, oh, man, really? I said, what are my alternatives? And she said, well, we could anesthetize you, but you'd have to go to another facility for that because we don't do that here. I said, okay, is there another alternative? She said, well, we could go next door to CVS and get a pill, but it takes about an hour for that to kick in. So you're basically going to be here all afternoon. And I'm sitting there with half of my face already numbed. And she said, I'm telling you, this doctor's really gentle. Why don't you just let him do it? I said, okay, fine. So he comes in. I've never met this guy. And, you know, I'm trying to practice some breathing techniques. Like, what is it, all the stuff I tell everybody about serenity? Because I'm needing a little serenity right now. Because I'm feeling a little bit stressed, and I don't like that. So he says, don't worry. I'm going to put some music on and relax you. I'm like, okay. So he turns his phone on, and he's playing like, I don't know who it was. It wasn't Barry White, but it was somebody like that. It was like kind of R&B soul music, and he's playing it kind of loud. And I'm thinking, this is our technique, really? Okay. And then he starts singing with it. And I'm like, really? You're going to sing to me? This is my alternative to to the nitrous oxide, huh? So I thought, well, I'm in this chair. I might as well just enjoy it. So I just sort of relaxed and let the guy sing to me. He actually had a pretty good voice. And lo and behold, it was over with pretty quickly. And he said, we're done. I said, really? That's it? We're done? And it was fine. I didn't have a lot of pain afterwards. It was like, it was just fine. And it was just another little life lesson to me. Like, don't obsess over things that don't really matter. And don't be afraid about things that just aren't going to be that big a deal. And, you know, it just was what it was. And you know, really, everything's kind of that way. It's like the Peggy Lee song, is that all there is? Is that, you know, she goes through all these things that happen in her life. Is that all there is? Don't make mountains out of molehills. Jesus would say things like, you strain at gnats, but you swallow camels. Or don't worry about the splinter that's in your brother's eye because you've got a 2x4 in yours. Or him saying to Martha, 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 you were troubled about many things. I mean, Jesus was kind of, I know people in the 21st century sort of reinvented Jesus and made him into a white conservative, but Jesus was actually kind of a hippie. Jesus was like, you know, go sit in a field and consider the lilies. You know, he wasn't telling you to buy guns. He was like, go look at a flower. Go, you know, they don't toil or spin. And yet Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these. I mean, Jesus was really kind of laid back about some things. Now, he could get you know, he could get his sandals in a twist when it came to things with religious people. But anyway, I've made my point. I'll leave you with this. Like, put quality into every day of your life, because no matter how many days you have left, you never know when it's going to be your last one. So leave people feeling better about themselves. Don't make people feel worse. I feel such pity for people that go to churches that their pastor makes them feel worse when they leave. And that's not the gospel. The gospel should always elevate you. It should make you feel better about yourself, about the world, about life. Yeah, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Yeah, politics is crazy, no matter what side you're on. Yeah, it's crazy world. Welcome to crazy world. Don't overreact to it. Learn to coexist with it. Learn to flow. Instead of always resisting the current, learn to set your sails. Take things in stride. Stop taking everything so personal. Stop overreacting to things that don't really matter. Just let a bunch of stuff go and focus on living the life that you've imagined. All right? Yeah, I know it was good. So send me some money. How about that? Stop with the amens. Open up the cash app. No, I'm just kidding. I don't even mean that. I kind of do. No, Paul said, if I've ministered spiritual things, you should minister natural things back to me. So anyway, and y'all are great about that. So I'm just joking. Thank you for those of you that continue to support Metron or JESM. If you want to do that, especially for your tax purposes, just go to bishinthenow.com, and it's real easy to do. Those of you that, some of you give to me directly, and I appreciate that, you won't get tax benefits from it, but you're laying up treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not corrupt. I do believe I'm good ground. I do believe I'm not just saying the typical religious BS that so many people hear, they don't even realize they're hearing it. If you want to be a part of next weekend, because I will not be here in this format next Sunday, we'll be doing a meditation. So if you want to be a part of that, join the group. I'll let you in. And if you ask for entrance, we'll have to have a board meeting to make sure we won't. No, just kidding. I got jokes. Now, we'll let you in as soon as you request. All right. I got mad love for you. Make your life count. Stay warm. Be careful if you're on the road. Peace. Wow.